This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you into the 7 o'clock hour we go. Great to be with you on a Thursday. Seth and I headed to West Palm Beach for a little spring ball. Thanks to Exclusive Furniture and Academy Sports and Outdoors. We will be there on Monday, starting Monday, broadcasting live from West Palm Beach. Very much looking forward to that. Nick Caserio was on with us yesterday, Texans Executive Vice President and General Manager. And we asked him, CJ's offseason approach, at least thus far, it's early in the offseason, but last year at this time, he was just coming off a Pro Bowl that he appeared at, had a great time. Radio Row, had a blast on Radio Row, was doing a lot of podcasts, a lot of interviews. Other than Travis Scott's softball game last week, C.J. Stroud has been largely off the grid this offseason so far. So we asked Nick Caserio about that yesterday. Is C.J. taking a different approach this offseason?
I think C.J.'s work ethic is unmatched. He cares a lot about football, has a lot of confidence and belief in himself. And there's some things that we've talked to him about that, hey, here's two or three things that, you know, we think you can focus on in the offseason. So whenever that clock starts, the clock starts.
Sorry, I cut that off kind of quickly. Nick pulled one of those so's right immediately after. So that's not Ben's fault, Sean. Don't crush Ben like you always do.
I'm not
angry
about it.
Okay.
It's interesting. The two to three things was interesting to me. Like, okay, what are the two or three things you're telling C.J. Stroud you got to work on in the offseason?
And then I think Nick gave us the answer pretty much immediately after that, for at least a couple of the things. And it's one thing that we had talked about during the season. I think C.J. got better at this one thing as the year went along.
He learned relative to decision-making, hey, you know what? This decision on this play, maybe the simple play, is not the sexy play, but it's the right play. So I think you saw that as the year went on. So he played a lot of good football. I think sometimes everything gets sort of jaded relative to CJ and his performance and how he played. I mean, you can go look at some of the things. I know nobody really gives a crap about stats, but, I mean, you look at some of the things that he did. I mean, the guy played really good football, so I think that sometimes it kind of gets lost a little bit.
I actually think people, the one thing I think maybe he was mistaken on there, I think people are basing a lot of their analysis, the people who are down on C.J. Stroud are basing a lot of the analysis on the regression statistically that he had this year.
Yeah, I think and that's where when you start to color in and you can try to paint anybody this way, that way, differently. I think that the one thing that C.J. really had going against him in terms of stacking up the conventional stats were how often they were in second and long and third and long, and third and extremely long at times, either because of sacks given up, because of false start penalties, all of that. It really skews everything to where it's really hard to have the same completion percentage and all of those other things, because you're just you're swinging from your heels a lot. You're backed up in the corner, and that's how the offense was this year. And some of those things, like any quarterback in the league, there's some things that he could have done better, but he just had a much higher margin of difficulty than he did the year before because of so many things that were decrepit in the offense.
Yeah, and I think, man, I think that period in the middle of the season, I've said this multiple times, but I'll say it again because I think it's germane to what we're talking about here. That week 7, 8, and 9 stretch where the pass protection was like historically abysmal, like routinely pressure rates 50-60%. That would be the Green Bay game, the Colts home game, and then that Thursday night debacle in MetLife Stadium against the Jets, where the Jets, who are not a good pass rushing team, sacked him 8 times on Thursday night. And CJ's somewhat, you know, he's partially culpable in that too. But, I mean, use your eyes, you know, like the offensive line, really, really bad. And I think that three-game stretch, I think, was something that affected him for more than just those 3 games. He was more jittery and jumpy and making stranger decisions. Like the 2 picks he threw the next week in the Detroit game were just so uncharacteristic, you know, especially the one, the underthrow to Tank. You know, yeah. Wide open in the end zone, that's a put-away shot for that game.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the one that there were a few plays in that stretch really going into the last game, to the misfire to Nico Collins, and I'm blanking on which game it was, the really egregious one.
Was that
the Ravens game?
It might have been, it was either the Ravens or the Chiefs game. He had a stretch where he missed like 4 straight.
It was in
passes.
The Ravens game.
Is it the Ravens
yeah.
game? Yeah.
And it just looked like there might be something physically wrong with
yeah.
him. And, you know, he alluded to it towards the end of the year, and he quickly said he didn't want to make excuses. But it's not like accurate quarterbacks all of a sudden become inaccurate, at least not when they're young. It is still a little bit of an inborn trait almost, where, look, accurate quarterbacks are accurate. It's really hard to turn inaccurate quarterbacks into accurate quarterbacks. And he had some wildly inaccurate throws that just didn't look right, that I have to think, barring just a completely cataclysmic falling apart of his physical skill set, he was more banged up than he let on. So that is reason for optimism, as long as he can stay healthy and not get hit as often as he did last year.
All right, you want to set this one up? You asked Nick about, you made a Jalen Hurts comparison about the lower body strength here.
Well, you know, Nick just kind of brought this up. We ended up talking about Jalen Hurts after this, yeah, because Nick brought up CJ's lower body strength.
They're going to have a new offensive system, so there's going to be a learning element that's involved there. Continue to train, get stronger, improve his lower body strength, and I think he showed he can make plays with his legs. So you just want to try to be a durable player and a durable athlete. So our ask is no different for CJ than it is for any other player.
Yeah, and I think that his lower body strength, he did look thicker this year in a good way.
Oh, yeah.
And he's a bigger guy. Like a lot of NFL quarterbacks, he's actually bigger than you realize. He's got a pretty big frame. I think he'll probably come back even a little bit sturdier next year. And does that help your throwing motion and throwing ability? Yes. But the Jalen Hurts comparison is when I think of Jalen Hurts, and what's so impressive about him is he's not a shifty runner.
No.
You know, when he runs, it's not pretty the way it is with some other athletic quarterback.
That's right.
It's just his ability to withstand contact in the pocket, and then his ability to get extra yardage and not necessarily take a lot of physical punishment because of it, because he's just so sturdy. And I'm not expecting him to all of a sudden be a guy who's just freakishly strong in his lower body, but I think he's going to continue to work on it and improve on it. And for a guy that's got a really good and solid throwing platform,
yeah,
it can make him that much better.
Yeah, his physique, he's got an interesting physique for a quarter. His physique skews more to the Jalen Hurts side than it does the Lamar Jackson side. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
Like CJ does. He's got a frame that I think can take on some of that thickness that you need.
And I think the other thing too is, all right, when you talk about things that he can improve on, one was, all right, the easy money plays, you got to take them more frequently.
Yep.
The checkdowns, especially when you're checking it down to Joe Mixon. Like that's a nice checkdown to have.
Absolutely.
The other one in the, I think it was the Ravens game again, remember he was getting hit from the left as he tried to throw the ball to a wide-open Dalton Schultz. I would put that one partly on the offensive line, because the the pocket was getting collapsed to an extreme degree. But I do think there's still an element there where CJ making that decision a 16th of a second earlier and recognizing that, those things need to come more regularly. And whether there's good pass protection on that or not, him being able to make that just really quick and without thinking about it. But then also deciding when to pull the ball down and run, and then not take as much punishment as he did when he was doing that.
Yep.
Like, you watch Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts does everything that we ask quarterbacks to do with the foot first slide. We're here in Houston. We're tending to skew these days towards like, hey, listen, man, if you're going to slide feet first, you got to do it and it actually be trying to take yourself out of danger, not just trying to get every little bit of yardage. Jalen Hurts goes down, and he goes down quick.
Yeah.
And he'll run out of bounds. Like, CJ's got it. As he does start to run more, hopefully, he's just got to learn to be judicious about how much punishment
he takes. I think he is going to run more. I think a good early prop bet for season totals is CJ Stroud rushing yards, because they're going to look at his total from last year. When they make that total in Vegas this year, they'll have prop bets for all this stuff. And they're going to look at his last year's total, and I don't know that Vegas is going to look at it as detailed as, oh no, he figured some things out in the playoffs with his legs, you know, and was openly talking about it. Quick text
here. The other thing, too, is I think that there's just a lot of young quarterbacks now have it drilled into their head by guys our age about, like, listen, don't let them tell you that you're an athletic quarterback. You're a pocket passer. And it's good advice, and it's good for guys to learn. Yes, I would much rather have a guy learn how to be a pocket passer first and then start to run. But it's in the modern NFL, you're not taking nearly the hit to your reputation that you used to by being a guy who runs a lot.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Pat Mahomes, nobody thinks of Pat Mahomes as a genuine dual threat quarterback, but he uses his legs really, really effectively.
Really well.
It's set up by how good he is with his arm. And I think that clicked for CJ this year.
We'll get to one of a couple of funny cuts from Nick Caserio yesterday in just a second. But just reacting to what we're talking about here with CJ Stroud, if you're just getting in your car, we're playing some audio from Nick Caserio yesterday where we did kind of a deep dive on CJ, his offseason, what he's looking to improve at. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. I tell people to look at Pat Mahomes in the Super Bowl. That pressure is what CJ dealt with all season. That's a statistical fact. Mahomes' pressure rate, I forget which stat outlet had this, but it matches the eye test, was somewhere in the high, like 38.4% or something like that.
I believe it was 37%,
okay.
Whereas with CJ, the average pressure he faced all season long was 39%.
Correct, yeah.
So CJ, on any given week, on average, was getting as much pressure as Pat Mahomes was getting in the Super Bowl, and Pat Mahomes had the second worst game of his career when he was getting that much pressure.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's really, really hard to play quarterback effectively when you're getting that much pressure.
It does, man. It allows your mind, when you lay it out that way, you know, the best quarterback of our generation, when he was facing the pressure that CJ faced all year, wilted like a leaf, you know, like he was horrible. And that CJ, you know, granted, not as good as he was his rookie year, at least statistically, but still, you know, not a horrible season, you know, a season that I would think statistically half the quarterbacks in the league would trade their season at least for CJ's. If you're a Texan fan, It does allow me to get a little bit excited. Like, if they're able to shore up this offensive line, if whatever Nick Caley and Cole Popovich, if whatever their teaching is, whatever the system is, if this gets through to these guys and they look just competent, they don't need to be elite. In pass protection specifically, if CJ gets an average pressure rate this year for quarterbacks, what he's going to be able to do, because we know what the numbers look like when he has time to throw. They're dynamite, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that's exciting.
The other part, too, there, when we talk about the action items, perhaps, for CJ, okay, when do you take the easy money? When do you throw the shorter, more boring passes? This is where I think the Bobby Slowick dynamic comes in. And Bobby Slowick's philosophy was a lot like the old-school Kubiak-Shanahan philosophy, which is, hey, we don't need hot routes. There's an answer in this play for whatever coverage you see. The thing that Nick alluded to yesterday was, all these teams are doing a lot of different stuff with Tampa 2, where it's different than the old school cover 2, and they do a much better job of disguising what you're going to see. So it's really just, it's a lot harder for quarterbacks to identify where the easy money's going to be.
Yeah.
And if you don't help, if the offensive coordinator doesn't help the quarterback out and give you crossing routes and mesh concepts and all this other stuff and hot routes on blitzes. It's really, really hard for quarterbacks to operate that way. And I think you're going to see a different mentality with Nick Caley when it comes to that.
Yeah, it's exciting, man. All right, so the lower body strength conversation took a bit of a twist with Nick yesterday, right, Seth?
Yeah, he wanted to make a baseball reference about the importance of lower body strength for people who throw balls. And so we went the baseball route.
And when you're playing quarterback, everything is ground-based. When you think about a pitcher, everything starts from the ground up. So having a good, firm base. I mean, go look at Nolan Ryan. Go look at Roger Clemens. Like, I don't know how much they were squatting, but nobody was more sturdy in their lower body than those two guys. I mean, Clemens had a big ass. Nolan Ryan had old man strength, but he could bend. He had lower body flexibility. You know, when he got in his windup, he pushed off the rubber, and the ball jumped off of his hand. So, yeah, you need arm strength, but you also need torque and lower body strength, which comes from your core, which comes from your leg. So what do you have to do? You have to train those areas.
You know what? We need to start talking more about Roger Clemens just so we can use that. Roger Clemens had a big ass.
Clemens had a big ass.
Nick's, Ben's already got it. Yeah.
Let me hear that again, Ben.
Clemens had a big ass.
Oh, we got to get Roger on because he'll take that as a compliment.
Totally,
obviously.
Totally.
Yeah, oh, 100% he'll take that as a compliment.
Hey, what if he didn't? What if for some reason, I totally think Clemens would, but let's just pretend like that he wanted to throw down. Who do you think would win in a fight between Roger Clemens and Nick Caserio?
Roger Clemens.
Some of these questions are absolutely ridiculous.
Screw you, Ben. But what if Nick were able to get him? What if Nick were able to like tire him out? You know what I mean?
You have to bob and weave a lot.
Yeah. Like the cardio part of it. I'm just spitballing.
I'll go back to. Okay, are we?
I mean, Roger's 60 now. You know what I mean?
Is it MMA or boxing?
It's just a fight. It's a street fight, like the end of Rocky
Five. Roger Clemens.
Yeah. Okay. If it's a
there's
boxing.
Something, Sean. I weight classes matter. Whenever wrestling gets involved, weight classes really matter because the big guy can just lean.
Yeah.
On that's what, my brother was an all-American wrestler, and like he used to beat the crap out of me growing up. Yeah. There came a point one Christmas vacation after I'd like really grown in college and everything. I grew 2 inches in college and then put on 100 pounds. He didn't wrestle me no more after that one Christmas morning because I just he was an all-American wrestler, but I outweighed him by 90 pounds. And there's nothing he could do about it.
Okay, what if it was a celebrity boxing match with the Roger
boxing is a whole different dynamic. So, I think that Caserio would probably train like crazy for and be more skilled, and he could bob and weave and dance around for a long time.
Yeah.
So I think I might have to take Caserio, but he's got to avoid the haymaker.
The big hit,
Yeah. How much do you think Caserio weighs?
Good question. I don't know. He looks taller, I think, than he is because he's got kind of that, you know, he's got that cardio frame working or whatever.
Yeah.
Like he's got, you know, kind of that slender frame going on. I don't know. Nick, if you're listening, text in your weight.
Because Clemens is nasty, too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think Nick's probably got a nasty side to him. But Clemens is, I mean, he's nasty.
Yeah.
And he was. I know he's 60. But, hey, how old was George Foreman in his last fight there?
His last fight, I don't know. He was in his mid-40s when he started fighting again as Heavy George.
When he was standing in the ring to show that he wasn't tired
just
and everything.
Just raining blows down on him and him standing there and taking him.
Clemens is 60?
Clemens,
possible.
Yeah, no, he is. He won the MVP in Cy Young in 1986 for the Red Sox. I was in high school at the time, so he's
62 years old.
Yeah, he's definitely. I was going to say in his 60s, probably.
Except he turned. This will be his 63-year-old season.
Okay,
so August 4th, he turns 63.
Okay, well, we want to get that fight in before August, so he could say he was 62. A lot of texts coming in. Great job, Ben, on that hotkey. Ben, you're getting some love. Someone says just make the hotkey say big ass instead of Clemens had a big ass. Look, do you want to workshop both of those and see what sounds funnier? Are you able to do that, Ben? If yeah.
Just had a big ass?
No, just big. Just the words big ass.
Big ass.
Oh,
no, I like the one that says Clemens.
No, we can use big ass though for whenever Caserio. You know when Caserio is talking about these reports that come out that a deal was agreed to at the combine. It sounded like you want to say like those guys are big asses. Like, what the hell? Like,
big ass.
Apparently people are doing negotiating that we thought we were not allowed to do.
There you go. We can use them both. All right, keep texting in. Jim Adler, Texas Hammer text line. A little more Casario here. This was interesting. This was we had a few texters say, hey, ask him about virtual reality, because Jaden Daniels in Washington uses virtual reality.
Jaden Daniels uses this system that he started using at LSU, where it's a virtual reality training system, which sounds incredible. Like, it can be tweaked for specific defensive backs to show exactly what leverage they use and everything.
Yeah.
So you can look at all these coverages that different teams use. And Jaden Daniels has used it really effectively. So I and many of our listeners have wondered, like, okay, so CJ's going to start using this, right? Because he's buddies with Jaden Daniels. Nick brought up a really good point that I hadn't thought about.
I would say specific to VR, some players are more comfortable with it. Some players are less comfortable, just like training methods. Some players are more comfortable with certain things relative to others. Ultimately, the player has to figure out and find what works best. Ultimately, you have to figure out what works for you individually. And as a team, if there's something that we can incorporate or add to our list of things and resources that we have already available, then we'll certainly look into it. There's always a cost associated with it as well. So you want to be, you know, smart and conscious about it. You just don't want to do something just to do it just because somebody else does it.
Yeah, and because for the virtual reality, different people have different physiological responses to it. Some guys, it just freaks them out. I ended up talking to my nephew. My nephew is a Bills fan in Buffalo.
Yeah,
that God bless him. He's been a Bills fan, he's a Texans fan. But he's taken all kinds of abuse over the years.
Is he the
Bills
one
fans.
That Bill O'Brien gave diabetes
gave type
to?
1 diabetes?
Because he got diagnosed the day of the DeAndre Hopkins trade.
They announced the DeAndre Hopkins trade, and within 2 hours, my nephew was in a diabetic coma. He didn't even realize he had diabetes up to that point. He had to get airlifted to Buffalo to a hospital because of Bill O'Brien's decision to trade away DeAndre
Hopkins. So you were chatting about VR with him yesterday?
Yeah, because he brought that up. I wanted to ask him about it because he's big into gaming and everything.
Yeah.
And he's big into iRacing, so like auto racing.
Oh.
So I figure, okay, like he probably knows a lot about simulate because, you know, the NASCAR drivers use simulators and everything.
Yeah.
But he said with VR, for him, it really screws him up. Like, everything's right there. It gives him, like, vertigo afterwards and everything. So maybe CJ is thought about it and tried it, but he might not respond to it.
Yeah.
But there's more and more systems like this that I think are really effective. They've got other ones where you're not wearing goggles or anything. And I got to look more into Jaden Daniels and exactly how his works. But I'm guessing it's something that CJ is going to consider, but it might not be personally the best thing for him.
Yeah. Well, and as Nick mentioned, he followed that up with an anecdote about one particular quarterback who was not a big fan of virtual reality.
It's kind of funny. I kind of have an anecdote on that. We actually, I forget what year that the first VR sort of model came out. It was a kid or a student or a guy founded a company. He was from Stanford. And we brought him out there in the spring in May. Brady put it on his head, and he basically took it off his head and almost broke it, threw it in the ground. So he's like, he had, you know, use for it. So again, everybody responds a little bit differently. Sounds like Jaden's got a lot of value and use out of it that works for him. It might not work for somebody else. So all of this is kind of case by case.
I didn't hear you say that the first time in the moment about the Surface tablet.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Can you imagine if it was this kid that's got probably venture capital funding and everything, and it's a prototype model that he's using, and Brady just smashes it to the ground?
Oh, my God. That's
classic Tom Brady move. That's why Giselle had to leave.
Yeah. He's got a temper. Yeah. He's got a temper, this guy. Yeah. Yeah. You know, doesn't have
Whereas
a temper.
that jiu-jitsu instructor is probably totally zen about everything.
Oh, mellow, man. He's got his VR goggles on.
Oh, you want to meditate for 2 hours, Giselle? Yeah.
Sure.
I'll totally do what Tom Brady was hesitant to do.
Right, yeah. Knock you up again. Yes, indeed.
That up. Knock you up again.
He did.
Wait, did he get her pregnant?
She just had a baby. She just had his kid.
Oh,
yeah.
Allegedly his kid. Who knows?
Yeah. I'm not here to parse out the paternity in the whole thing. The reports are it's his kid, the jiu-jitsu
this,
guy.
That VR system that Jaden Daniels uses, it can run at 1.75 times real life speed. So when you're going through reads,
wow,
you're going through it at hyper speed. So probably, when you get into the game, everything looks like it's happening in slow motion.
Like, literally, when they say, yeah, everything's slowing down for me, like for Jaden Daniels, like, no, literally, everything is 75% slower or whatever it is.
Oh, God, I hope CJ physiologically responds okay to
this. To VR. did Nick, in the cuts we just played or in the conversation about, I'm trying to recall, did he say at all if they'd even tried it or entertained it or anything like that?
He didn't say that. Yeah. This is a question that somebody needs to ask CJ the next time he stands up and talks about it.
Who knows when that's going to be? Because he's invisible this offseason.
I was trying to figure out if Jaden Daniels' system uses goggles or not. But like all the articles I popped up were, you could tell it was a thumbnail or a photo where they had just photoshopped goggles onto Jaden Daniels' face. So I don't know, man. All that stuff, the early stuff, too, like anything with virtual reality or video games or anything, the early stuff always sucks. Mm-hmm. So I can imagine Tom Brady, whatever version of it Tom Brady saw, probably wasn't lifelike enough for him. And he's like, I don't need this. I've already got this dialed in.
Yeah.
But for a young guy learning it, it could be really... I mean, it's been awesome for Jaden Daniels.
No doubt. Well, someone says here on the text page, apparently Jaden Daniels' first read throwing is very high despite the virtual reality stuff.
Yeah.
He hits his... Whatever he's doing is working.
Okay. Does the texter say despite the first?
Yes.
Okay. But this is important though, because that does involve the virtual reality because it's the pre-snap stuff too. It's identifying blitzes. It's identifying coverages. That system,
you know, right where to go with
that
the ball.
System will find the tendencies of different teams and when they do blitz versus when they're just disguising blitz. Mm. All of that stuff.
Yeah.
So with a guy who's really good with his first reads, what you worry about going into his second season is, hey, teams have an entire offseason to look at, all right, with this quick stuff, where does he really like to go? We're going to take away that first read. That's where theoretically, and we'll see next year, theoretically the virtual reality stuff helps because he can better identify when teams are trying to do that to him. So it's not just a matter of, okay, VR is good or VR is bad.
Right.
It's which VR system is good and how does the guy that's using it use it and does he respond to it? That's the huge unknown.
Yep. I'm glad I read that text. That was a good breakdown of that right now. Clemens would just need to sit on Nick. That's what a texter says.
Yeah. Well, when my brother was sucking weight like crazy to wrestle 177 when he was in college. And at that time, the weight classes were like 177, 190, and then heavyweight, which is 275.
Jeez.
So my brother, they had a really good wrestler on their team who was at 190, and my brother was 177. And he was sucking weight. He looked like a vampire at the end of every season.
Ugh.
So finally he said, all right, I don't want to take I don't want to battle it out with the guy at 190. It's not the best for the team. I'm just going to wrestle at 275. And he ended up doing really well, but he weighed like 215 as he was doing it. And the problem is, like, once you're going up against the guys that you might be a better wrestler pound for pound with, but it's a 290-pound guy who's sucked down to 275, and you wear down. You might say, yeah, my brother had better endurance, but the 290-pound dude can just lean on him for the entire match, and you can't do it. So, yeah, Clemens would basically just sit on Nick Caserio until Caserio got tired out.
Clemens had a big ass.
Yeah, he's just going to,
You're wondering why we're handicapping a Caserio versus Roger Clemens fight? It's because Nick Caserio said on the show yesterday, while breaking down the sturdiness of pitchers like Roger Clemens and Nolan Ryan, said...
Clemens had a big ass.
Yeah, but he said it in a complimentary way. He said it in a way I think that's...
Clemens would totally be on board with that because Clemens worked out real hard, too. He was like Nolan Ryan.
Clemens was trying to have a big ass. That was an intentionally big ass that he had.
Plus, we've reached a time in society, too, where largely a woman is more likely to be complimented by you saying that she has a big ass.
Right.
And athletes have always known that it's good to have a big ass.
Yeah.
As long as it's a muscular ass.
Junk
not a
in
big,
the trunk.
Flabby, yeah.
Hell yeah. Speaking of fights, apparently Pat Mahomes Sr. was forced to admit in court documents that the French Quarter dust up between him and John Rocker. If you guys missed that last week, it popped up on TMZ and on social media. Pat Mahomes, old man who used to pitch in the big leagues for about a decade, got into a bit of an altercation. No punches were thrown, but an altercation with former Major League closer John Rocker, and the two were yelling at each other. Rocker threw a drink. Mahomes' entourage that he was with kind of pushed him away, so there were no punches exchanged. There were tweets exchanged afterwards between the two, which started to make people look at a little side-eye going, is this leading to something? And sure enough, it was leading to, what is it, Rough and Rowdy that Dave Portnoy at Barstool does, an event?
I think so.
Yeah, where he gets random people together to get into fights. Apparently, it's quite the scene.
It's kind of like the old, what was it that Butterbean would do, those old boxing matches back in the day?
Oh, yeah, I, they were gimmicks, I know that.
There was a lot of guys that off the streets almost that would just show up and box, yeah.
Yeah, apparently it's crazy. We've had people text in who've watched it before. I guess it's an annual event. I don't know. I've never seen it. But Mahomes missed a urine test the next day after that video surfaced because he's on his third DUI, so he's got commitments to show that he's, you know, staying sober, not drinking, being responsible, all those things. He missed a urine test, so he had to explain why. Like it's now in court documents that he's like, well, I'm fighting in this fight, and we had this thing that I was doing with Rocker the night before. He had to admit it. He had to admit that the whole thing was staged.
So when was the actual court date that he admitted that? That was before
it was after he missed his urine test. He ended up taking the urine test.
Right, I know, but I'm saying, but was that admission before any of the Super Bowl stuff happened?
No, it was all after.
Right. Okay. So now we don't know though, because he could have just been lying about why he was why he missed it. I don't know. Or I guess the missed urine test would have been before the Super Bowl.
Let me read the dates here. The Doc State Mahomes Senior, who was placed on probation last year after pleading guilty to a charge of DUI third or more, so he's on his third DUI, was given permission to travel to watch his son in Louisiana from February 7th through February 10th. But when he got into a squabble with Rocker, which was after the Super Bowl, and then subsequently missed a urine test the next day on February 11th, officials wanted to know more. According to the docs, the officials were slated to admonish Mahomes Sr. for his behavior, although in an apparent effort to avoid trouble, Mahomes Sr. fessed that the Rocker incident, quote, was a staged altercation to get publicity for a celebrity boxing match that is set to take place in April of this year.
Oh, okay, so we don't know for sure. He could have totally just been lying about that just to get out of his trouble. Yeah.
Perjury.
So we still don't know. Okay. We know that it almost definitely was staged.
Well,
that's just my gut feeling.
Well, especially because they are actually fighting now in this thing. Like, I don't think Portnoy, like, watched that video, got on the phone with both of them, and within 24 hours had the fight ready to go.
I don't know, man. Portnoy moves pretty quick on stuff
like this. He's a mover and a
shaker.
These guys are,
like, he knows when he sees an opportunity that it's kind of like those porn companies that offer people a porn contract immediately after something weird happens.
Cam Soda. Yeah, they offer him like a webcam deal.
Yeah, don't underestimate Dave Portnoy's really weird genius.
That's true. I don't have that same entrepreneurial gene that Dave Portnoy does. The entrepreneurial gene sees opportunity and pounces away.
And jumps right on it.
Good point. It's a good point. The TMZ article. Here's the other thing. The TMZ article says that Mahomes, they call him the 57-year-old, was able to avoid problems after meeting with the officials, as a judge merely told him an application to revoke his probation could be filed if he slips up again moving forward. So they gave him a slap on the wrist, said don't do it again. This is the third different age that I've seen Pat Mahomes Sr. labeled with. When this whole thing first started, I looked it up somewhere, and he was 52. His Wikipedia page says he's 54. This article says he's 57. What the hell is going on?
He was a pro baseball player. Was he a Dominican? I don't know. Maybe there's one of those Latin American prospect things where you don't know exactly how old he is.
You're right.
This is the other bogus thing about the way some news outlets. Like, the New York Post here says, Pat Mahomes Sr. admitted in court that John Rocker altercation was, et cetera, et cetera. There are other, you will see headlines where it's like, Mahomes gets his third DUI. You clickbaity SOBs. I know.
It's accurate.
I'm all for it. I give them a pass on this.
It's accurate.
Because I am, as much as possible, going to refer to Pat Mahomes Sr. as just simply Pat Mahomes.
Yes.
Henceforth.
No.
Yes.
We need all of Mahomes Sr.'s chicanery to wind up on Mahomes Jr.'s ticket, because we're trying to win a Super Bowl and get a new stadium built, man. If this is how the Kansas City Chiefs kingdom gets taken down, because Mahomes Jr., the mental torture of his old man doing celebrity rough and ready and getting DUIs, if that's what takes him down, that's what takes him down. We got to win games and win championships here in Houston. Okay?
Every photograph I see of Pat Mahomes Jr. with his father, Pat Mahomes Sr., after a game, looks like an athlete who is being like accosted in a friendly way by a really drunken fan.
Yes.
And Mahomes is just kind of like, okay, yeah, buddy, here we go. Like, if I didn't know any better, I would think that's totally just some drunken fan that just loves Pat Mahomes. Man, is he drunk.
You know what he looks like? He looks like every Notre Dame football player that was there back in the early 90s when my brother played there, when Rudy, the real Rudy, would come up to them at tailgates. Like, Rudy's this little guy who's like, hey, guys, how we doing? You know, he's like a grating personality if you just got done playing 60 minutes of football and you're just trying to tailgate and unwind, you know? And he's coming up, hey, how you doing, buddy?
Well, he was kind of, wasn't he kind of like the guy, was like the creepy older guy that was always hanging around.
He was, before the movie got made, he was the super at a condo complex across the street from the campus where a lot of the players lived. So he'd have keg parties, and he had a unit in there that, you know, they let the super live there for free. So he had a unit in there, and he would throw parties on football weekends, and all the players would wind up going there because you drink for free and you hang out. You don't have to drive anywhere. You just walk to your place afterwards.
But he was a little bit like the 28-year-old at the high school party.
Yeah.
Like a guy that graduated 10 years ago.
Except
usually that guy, if he's 28, it actually graduated like 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And
we'll put it this way. He graduated in 75.
Yeah.
And the era we're talking about was 1993. So he's like a good 18 to 20 years older than. Yeah.
He was just soaking up all the residual love from the Rudy era, as much as he could.
The Lanyap.
Was he a good super?
I don't know. He made a pretty good movie. Did you like Rudy? I liked Rudy.
I didn't like it because I had heard stuff from Notre Dame football players before I saw the movie about what a pain in the ass Rudy was.
Okay.
Like,
so there you go.
What a joke. Like, you know, when they put him into play and everything, it was more of just like the players. I don't know. I just heard that the way that Notre Dame football players felt about him wasn't the same as how the movie portrayed
him. I'm actually doing a charity event at the end of March. Same charity last year, Christus Foundation for Healthcare.
Yeah.
The one where I interviewed CJ last year.
Yeah.
And the guest of honor this year is Sean Astin, who played Rudy in the movie Rudy, the actor. So that'll be it'll be interesting to talk to him about that, portraying Rudy. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. All right, mock draft injection time. We're going to this is yet another, I will tease this, this is a player that we have not seen get drafted by the Texans in any of our previous mock draft injections that I think a lot of people locally here will actually be very, very excited about. And we'll talk about that. We'll do the mock draft injection for today. That is coming up next.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and, for shoppers, buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Karam Injury Lawyers Studios. Sports Radio 610 presents Pain and Pendergast.
All right, hey, quick reminder, listen to Sports Radio 610 on the Odyssey app for an hour each day. That's your entry into our Slam Dunk in Vegas National Contest. If you win, you and three friends headed off to Circa in Vegas to hang out in their sports book, hang out in their stadium swim experience. This is all going to take place during the college basketball championship tournament. You're going to get an extra $20K in your pocket, $20K in Vegas for a few days. Sounds kind of fun. Just download the Odyssey app. Listen for an hour each day. You'll get your daily entry into the Slam Dunk in Vegas contest. All right, mock draft injection time. And this is a name. This is a position that, well, I don't know with this particular player, because he might have a couple positions he could play.
Yeah.
This is a name we've not seen yet, but I think it's a name that will excite at least a portion of our listening audience just based solely on where he went to school. So let's do this right now, Ben, with the 25th pick. Oh, I'm sorry. The mock drafter. Hang on, Ben. Don't fire it up again in a second here. The mock drafter we are looking at today is SI.com's Daniel Flick.
Daniel Flick?
Daniel Flick of SI.com. This is mock draft.
Jiminy Glick?
This is mock draft 6.0 for Daniel Flick. This guy wakes up in mock drafts, man. He's on mock draft version 6. It's February 20th. This guy was born to mock. holy hell. 6 already.
I think Banks is going a lot higher.
Well,
than
hang 25th. On. I haven't announced a selection yet.
Okay,
I was doing
sorry.
My attribution first, Seth, yeah, for Daniel yeah. Flick. With the 25th pick. Spoiler alert. 25th overall pick, the Houston Texans in the Daniel Flick SI.com mock draft. Select, yes, Kelvin Banks Jr. Tackle. He lists Kelvin Banks Jr., Flick does, as offensive tackle / offensive guard. This is by far the lowest I've seen him go in any of the mock drafts. Is that where you were about to say?
Yeah, that? Yeah. I could only find one where he went lower than 25, one or two where he went lower than 25. Mm-hmm. He goes to the Rams at 26 and one. He goes to the Chiefs at 31. Everybody else has them like 18 or higher. Yeah. Most of them in the top half of the first round.
Yeah.
So I don't want to act like it's a moot point or anything, but at least in terms of the mock draft world, this would be a little bit of a steal. I haven't seen any reasons that he would fall. There's no character concerns
right.
or anything like that.
Right.
I guess the biggest worry I'd have is, all right, is he a tackle or is he a guard? And some of the things that people say about him is that he doesn't tend to handle power as well as he does, that that he's very athletic, does a good job, needs some refinement. But he's, I guess, a little bit of a tweener when it comes to offensive linemen. But I don't want to overthink it. As of right now, it seems the scuttlebutt is that he's a guy that would go in the top half of the first round anyway. So it's a decision that we probably wouldn't have to make.
Here's what Flick says about him, and he echoes some of the things you just said. There are questions about whether Banks has the length to stick at tackle, but regardless, he'd be a strong fit in Houston. Cites the sack numbers the Texans allowed last year, tied for third most in the NFL. Banks allowed only one sack, two hits, and seven hurries this season for the Longhorns. Now, they play in the SEC now, so that would be on brand for a lot of what Nick has done with his drafts the last couple of years. The Longhorns play an SEC schedule, so he saw a lot of high-level college edge rushers, at least, highlighting his quick feet, his strong upper half, enabling him to both block both finesse and power rushers. Banks may go much earlier than 25th, but his doubts arise about his future at tackle. His stock isn't where it once was. So it sounds like Flick has him slipping here because he's sliding potentially out of a position of value into a position that's generally less valued in the first round.
Yeah.
Tackle to guard. Yeah.
Right. But I think that, I don't know. People seem pretty damn impressed with him. I'm always curious with this about what do our Longhorns feel about this?
Oh,
sometimes
yeah.
You get a more skeptical and accurate assessment of prospects sometimes. Maybe not as much with offensive linemen, but with quarterbacks especially. Whenever a guy is supposedly rising on the draft board and he's a quarterback, and meanwhile, the fan base is like, what the hell are people seeing in this bum? I feel like, all right, I'm going to listen to the fans on this one.
Well,
they've watched this guy enough.
They watch this. I would submit this, that the average super fan of a college has probably watched more snaps of these guys than the average draft expert.
That's true. The super fans and then some of the guys that are watching it with an educated eye. You're right.
Yeah,
they've seen. In Lance's write-up on this, in Lance Zierlein's write-up, he has an AFC area scout who says this. This is intriguing. I might have to go back and watch a little bit of film on this one. I wrote him up as a guard for us. The game he had as a freshman against Will Anderson, ever heard of him?
Yeah.
Was maybe the best game of his career.
Okay.
Now I'm intrigued.
That's impressive.
We'll have to ask Will Anderson about him.
Yeah. Why did you get dominated by Kelvin Banks? That's how we'll phrase the question.
Did you think you could take it easy versus Kelvin Banks?
You know what?
Did you get a little cocky, Will Anderson, because you were playing a freshman?
Do you think it's even possible to anger Will Anderson in a media session? Like, I don't
In a
media session. Like, okay. I don't think I've ever seen him do a media session where he hasn't had a smile, either a smile on his face the whole time, or he looks like kind of downtrodden because they just lost the game. I don't think I've ever seen him angry or even irritated. Yeah.
We'll have to ask some of the pool reporters whether they've ever seen Will Anderson get agitated because Will's not at the podium that much.
Right.
So the guys that are like seeing him face to face, I think part of it is that as a writer, you might think you're the crustiest. Maybe you write for the New York Post or something. You could be the crustiest old dude in the world.
Yeah.
There's something about Will Anderson's aura that probably just takes it right out of you.
Yeah.
You can't even ask the nasty question.
Yeah, man.
So Will Anderson owned by Kelvin Banks.
Yes. Ben, put that in the big book of questions we need to ask Will Anderson with a negative slant.
So this was written by Daniel Flick, which made me immediately think of Jiminy Glick. And thank you to Ben for being very quick on getting this. Do you know who Jiminy Glick is?
I don't, actually.
Okay, Jiminy Glick was a character that Martin Short played, which was kind of like, it was like the Between Two Ferns before Zach Galifianakis was born.
Okay.
He would do these interviews where kind of satirical interviews. This is Jiminy Glick interviewing Jerry Seinfeld.
And one night we got together and watched your special. You kept like, why do people, I can't remember anything else, but it was the phrasing was very unique.
Right.
Some people would say, boy, he seems so kind of bland and there's a nothingness there, but I don't feel that. I feel that there's a wisdom to you. Just because the eyes are so dull doesn't mean that there's not a machinery of wheels clicking away. And then you see your show. There's the stout little boy who seems concerned, and then the frazzled one who is my personal favorite, and then the young girl from SNL.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Did you ever keep up with them?
Oh, sure. I talked to them all the time.
You went, oh, sure, and your voice went, oh, sure, a lie. Yeah. Let me get this straight. You used their talent, and you discarded them away.
That's the way it works.
Yeah.
I'd never seen that before.
Yeah, I didn't like Jiminy Glick at all when I was younger, but now that I'm an old man, I'm like, I like that Jiminy Glick does it right. Yeah,
Jiminy Glick guy. That's funny.
Jiminy Glick, it's a lot like the Between Two Ferns.
Yeah.
The celebrity. Those are fun because they show up on social media and people don't know that it's a joke. and then it's just fun to read the comments. They've breathed new life into that format because it's just fun to watch all the people who take it dead serious.
That's Martin Short, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm most familiar with Ed Grimley. That's the character of his that I'm most acquainted with.
Was that an SNL character?
That was an SNL character like back in the 80s, though. He was like a hyper nerd. Pants pulled
up. Oh, the super creepy, like the pinhead thing going,
yes.
And everything.
Yeah. Martin Short
and Steve Martin have like made an incredible resurgence.
Yeah.
They're all over the place these days.
Commercials.
It's impressive.
Yeah.
Well, they teamed up. They were doing like some tour a few years ago, a comedy tour.
Yep.
And it seemed to have kind of vaulted them back into the public eye.
It's good, man. It's good. Good to get the old guys some work, man.
Steve Martin is the picture I have, my motivational workout picture.
Should be. Yeah.
He's like 78 years old, and he's spry.
Did he do
the Schwarzenegger and put up Steve Martin.
Yeah. Did he do the monologue? I haven't watched SNL 50 yet. Did you watch it? The 50?
No, I didn't watch any of that.
Okay, I didn't either. Right? I think he did the monologue I thought I saw. He said something like, we've had 845 people, or some number, some huge number, be the host, you know, the guest host of Saturday Night Live, and only two murderers.
Who was it?
I don't know.
OJ?
I'm guessing one had to be OJ, right?
OJ definitely hosted SNL.
Yeah, at some point. And I think
did Aaron Hernandez?
No. I think Amy was guessing that he might have been referring to. Is it Alec Baldwin who had a gun incident at a
Oh my God! Oh yeah. Wow!
Yeah,
I know.
Dude, it's an edgy monologue.
I know, but Alec Baldwin is one of the guys that's hosted it a bunch of times.
Right?
Yeah,
it had to be one of them.
Mulaney is the one who actually had the murder line.
Okay.
So John Mulaney was the one that said, yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I thought it was Steve Martin who had said that. Yeah. Either way. Has OJ ever hosted it? Did you Google OJ?
Yeah. OJ's one of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't. Alec Baldwin. There were four that could have been candidates, I guess. OJ Simpson, Robert Blake, Alec Baldwin, and Robert Wagner.
Okay.
So we don't know exactly who they were. Maybe originally he was going to say four, but he's like, all right, listen. We still got a relationship with Baldwin.
Baldwin was on the show.
So we'll just say two.
Yeah.
And then we'll have plausible deniability.
We'll leave it up to Baldwin. The audience to pick which two. Yeah. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. Hey, let's give away some rodeo tickets amidst the maniacal cackle of Seth Payne.
That's awesome by Mulaney.
let's give away some rodeo tickets. Bun B's birthday bonanza, 713-572-4610. Caller number 5 wins a 4-pack of tickets. See Bun B's birthday bonanza. It's March 7th. That's a Friday during the rodeo. Call now, 713-572-4610. Caller number 5, you're on your way. Give us a call. 713-572-4610. We're going to do this every other hour all day long, whether you like it or not. I think people like it. People love Bun B. So Bun B's birthday bonanza, that's the giveaway. Phones are ringing. Caller number 5. Good luck to everybody on this contest. Up next, hey, question I got to the Utopia Football Podcast mailbag. Where does D'Amico Ryans rank in the job security department among NFL Ooh. Head coaches? How Ooh. Frigid is the seat of D'Amico Ryans compared to some of his contemporaries? I thought it was an interesting question because it does beg the question, what would it take for any heat to be turned up on that seat? We'll discuss that coming up next.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Nick's, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. Five times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.